titties. And welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
All right, here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome back to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm thrilled that you can join us today. We are going to be talking about when Alzheimer's disease hits your family or circle of friends and how one author dealt with all of that. But before I introduce her, I always, again, just like to let everyone know that Alzheimer's Speaks is True Talk Radio. Everyone is welcome to join the conversation. We are live today, so if you have a question or a comment, you can call in at 323-870-4602, though I know most of you listen afterwards to the podcast. I also want to just let you know that the radio show is only one of the forms of education that we do. If you visit AlzheimerSpeaks.com, you will find a lot more information there, from services and programs to free education and marketing and branding. And there on the tab, it's not quite finished yet, but I have just written a book. We're wrapping up here, called Betty the Bald Chicken, and that is all about how we care. And so feel free to check that out. No, that page isn't quite flushed out yet, but it'll give you a little bit of an idea there. We are going to talk with Kirsten Levy, who wrote the book Alzheimer's Fantasy in the Key of G, and I'm thrilled that she's able to join me today. She has had a long career in research and administration at Boston University, where she managed research, brought funds to the university, published several academic publications, and she also has an MBA in healthcare management. And so these two pillars in her career, set in that whole medical environment which she worked, really helped her when it came to Alzheimer's disease knocking on her family's door. So welcome, Kirsten. How are you doing today?
I'm very fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm excited to have this conversation. I always find it, you know, interesting. And if you want to tell our audience a little bit about, you know, how you've been personally touched by dementia in your own family or circle of friends, that just kind of helps set the stage a little bit for us.
Sure. Well, I didn't really think I would get to this point, but it was, on another hand, it's kind of a natural. As I was caring for my own mother, whose decline in Alzheimer's was a sad thing to witness and be part of, I found the caregiving experience something very difficult, and I did not want Alzheimer's caregiving, being in the hospital, the watching her decline, the food regimen, all of those caregiving parts of the puzzle. I didn't want Alzheimer's to engulf my mother. It was already engulfing her. I wanted to talk about her family story and her as an individual using Alzheimer's as the way in. So I'm kind of not coming at this memoir from the caregiving perspective, but more I'm using the setting of Alzheimer's as a way to go into her mind, sort of, kind of, if you get my meaning, go into her mind and speak for her so that she could speak through me.
Mm-hmm. No, totally understand that. Now, I always like to ask two authors why they named the book the way, you know, the way you did, and how did you come across that, the Alzheimer's Fantasy in the Key of G?
Well, I've been asked that question a lot, and I hope my answer suffices. It seems to be satisfactory. People are very puzzled, and then I explain. The going into my mother's mind and seeing where she went and could she take me with her, that was imagination. I'm in the hospital room with her. I'm trying to connect, and she was by then nonverbal. She could not talk and hadn't spoken much or introduced our family. My brothers and sisters hadn't really met much of her own family. There were tons of cousins around whom we did not know. So I was kind of at a disadvantage, but I could use my imagination and think of where she was in her disease and where she might be going. So that's a kind of a fantasy, and I thought that would be kind of neat in the title, an Alzheimer's Fantasy. And then the Key of G part is a way to kind of introduce four family themes. Throughout the book, I talk a lot about, well, her family name, her maiden name, Griffin, long-standing Irish name, galaxy and gravity, two concepts. My mother loved to have her feet solidly on the ground, but my grandmother and my father, her husband, they kind of looked up into the stars, so gravity and galaxy. And then G. Clef, that's a music concept. I'm using it in my book as a thematic, but there was music in my family, so Key of G. That's where the title comes from. It's kind of long, and it's got a lot of explanation behind it, but I hope it has a little bit of a lilt to it.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. You had mentioned that you kind of strayed away from the traditional health memoir format. Did you struggle, putting this together with multiple points of view? Was that difficult for you?
Actually, I did it on purpose. When I was relating the story, my Alzheimer's experience with my mother in the hospital and all the years of tending to her needs and going down to visit her where she lived, which was quite a bit away from where I live. When I was encountering all of that and relating what the actual, relating, it was kind of like a narrative, and I was talking from the omniscient narrator's point of view, the third person point of view. It was coming out rather dry and kind of lackluster. So I thought of a different way to introduce multiple points of view, mine, my own. My mother's in that spacey place where I went to meet her in her brain. A narrator, I come right out and I use a narrator and I address readers directly as dear reader. When I used those other points of view, things got a little more interesting. So I do stray from the traditional omniscient narrator's point of view, or the strictly the first person point of view. I do go a little bit away from that, but I did it on purpose in order to make things a little more interesting.
Okay. So you didn't start out that way. It just felt like you needed to kind of adjust it as you went along because it was too dry?
I had to adjust it. It was feeling too dry to me, and I was saying, well, where am I in all this? I'm relating all this stuff about being in the hospital and what that means, what the hospital staff are trying to do, how my mother likes it. She didn't like it. It just didn't convey much except mm-hmm. for the actual words of explanation. Wanted
sure.
to go a little bit beyond that.
Yeah. Well, it's important to capture the reader in the moment and stuff. So I totally understand that. Why don't you tell us, how you experienced storytelling versus, giving care?
Well, first I want to start off by saying that I don't want to create an either-or situation, that one is in the experience, one is dealing with it. And people who live with Alzheimer's, I think I read a statistic, 8 years, that's a long time. My own writing of the memoir and then reflecting after it and writing, caring for her, and then the reflection and the writing, that was about 18 years if I were to calculate it out straight. And I kind of didn't want the caregiving to be engulf the whole story. I thought there was another way to relate to my mother and connect with her by going beyond her simple disease. It was the one she feared the most, and that's the one she succumbed to. I didn't want that to be the defining thing. I wanted to use the setting of Alzheimer's in the last few years of her life. I wanted to use the Alzheimer's setting as the way to set a story that goes way back to her ancestors when they lived in Ireland. And mm-hmm. I introduced her family story by the mechanism of the Alzheimer's caregiving situation. Again, I'm not a clinician, and I don't have the last word on how you give care. Everybody's story is different. Everybody will find it's the story that matters. It's not really the patient who has the disease. The story allows you to speak up for the patient and mm-hmm. allows the patient to speak to you in some ways.
Agree. And it's the lessons wrapped in all of that experience, too, that I think are so vital. Was there a chapter that was easier to write than the others?
Well, again, the stuff related to actual caregiving at the hospital or the day-to-day when I would go drive down and visit and spend the weekend and get the meals taken care of and what are we going to do today, Mom? And let's don't cancel the Meals on Wheels. Last time you canceled it, you just bailed right out. Please don't do it this time. That stuff was easy to write. I was kind of boiling with it, all the hospital jargon, and that just flowed out of me. But that, again, it wasn't, so it was the easiest to write, but it wasn't where I wanted to stay. I wanted to go beyond that and get into the family story. The hospital would tell me what they would use the jargon, and they needed to make sure that I was at a certain stage of understanding what the end of life means. And when you are in a conversation with healthcare providers, that's the coordinators, the nurses, the treating physician, there's a bunch of you in the room and you have these meetings, it's creepy when they explain what it's going to look like as your mother approaches the end of life and what that really means. So that part was easy, that came right out, but I spent more time on the other things that I wanted to say, and each of those other things were difficult in their own way. I would have to edit them and structure them. Fortunately, memoir has a kind of a built-in chronology. If you can go from beginning to end, you lived it, you know what happened in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. So you kind of have that you can fall back on, but you can't really leave your story hanging on chronology. That can get a little boring. So I would try to change it up a little bit. I love historical detail. I did a lot of research, but I didn't want my book to turn into historical fiction. I didn't want to depart from the actual crux of the matter, which was my mother. So those pieces, although they were the more kind of, dare I say, entertaining, they had to be managed. And I also wanted to be fair but strong. Some people might say that I was too strong and some not strong enough. So those things had to be managed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough on that. As far as, you know, the most challenging chapter, was there one that stuck out for you on that?
The most challenging chapter. The challenge was how to make it into a story that has my initial drafts. I did 5 full on drafts, and the initial 3 it kind of read like 2 separate stories. The when my mother had Alzheimer's part and the part where the immigration from Ireland to Boston and growing up in Somerville, Massachusetts, that came out like 2 stories. And that's exactly what I didn't want. I wanted one story. So the challenge was how to make those coalesce. And when I began with the multiple points of view, I could work things in different chapters that were too chronological in the beginning. But if I worked them in, say, having them said by a different person or in a different sequence, it began to take on better shape and it began to feel like it all belonged.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I can't really point to one particular thing, chapter, but I can point to the difficulty as being how to make it all mesh.
Okay. Do you think that your background, you know, your work background in research and things helped you prepare for caring on this journey?
I think I consider myself lucky to have been in a biomedical research environment. It's such a can-do environment, and I was working with a stellar clinician and administrator. He was my very best boss anyone could ever be blessed with, and he kind of let me do my own thing. If I wanted to attend a seminar, they're open to everybody, but oftentimes, you know, you think you can't go because your boss wants you present in the office answering the phone or doing this or that. He was fine with it. As long as I got my work done, I even went back to school and part-time. He was okay with that, too. So it was an open environment. I think that was the plus. It was researchers all around me were working on very big questions, not Alzheimer's per se, but they were working on other very big questions in heart disease, hypertension, and I am not a clinician, and I am not a researcher. I was an administrator in research, but I could really get a pretty good idea for how they go about it and what they do and how challenging it is, but it's very worthwhile. And these are the very big questions we still have today. So totally conducive to making you making you think and how you might go about inspiring you to go about doing your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot, and it sat with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the things I always wonder, too, when you write a book, because, I mean, it's just such a personal thing, but were there things that, you know, you didn't share that you wish you would have included in the book after you published it?
Well, I felt that I was being, at time, I consider my book frank and honest. And the story isn't necessarily pretty. So in that sense, I have related quite a few unpretty details. I didn't want to add on and add more unpretty details. And I probably should have put in some of the fun and more lighthearted moments. I did both. But I shied away from making certain events. Like, for instance, I was once walking on the beach with my mother. She was a very big beach lover. It was the middle of the winter, and the sand was blowing in our faces. There was a stiff wind. It was very cold. This was Newport Beach in Newport, Rhode Island. And she wanted to go out for a walk, so we went out for a walk. And she was wondering, she was feeling very downcast about how all of us were getting along, my brothers and my sister and herself. My parents had divorced. Things didn't really work out. She was sad about what she saw, and I didn't know quite how to make her feel better about it. I didn't put that in the book. It was already going in a sad way, and I had no resolution for it, so I didn't add that. On the other hand, she was a very witty person, and I captured her wit. I'm pretty sure of that. I could have been a little bit more lighthearted. I could have added a few more of those types of things, but I didn't. It's pretty lengthy. It's over 400 pages, so I couldn't just keep going on and on and on. You have to know, at some point, you have to know where to call it quits, right?
Yep, exactly. Well, it's, you know, writing a book is so much more work than I think most people have a clue of what goes into it and, you know, how does it flow, all of those types of things.
I recently was asked, pardon me, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's fine, go ahead.
I was at a book signing recently, and I was asked that very same question. I mean, point blank, how much time did this take? And I had to answer that that first part where I was in the hospital, chapter one in particular, I don't know, about 80 pages, came out in no time at all. I mean, it had some variations, some rewriting, but it was essentially the same. That took no time. Then I put the whole thing to bed for several years because she was starting to decline more and more, and that was occupying my attention. I wasn't writing till the time of her decease. And then in 2011, when she died, till 2020, when I had my fifth or sixth draft, I was going full, pretty on, not full bore, but I spent the last 3 years, let's say, writing every day, 5 days a week, 5 or 6, 4 or 6 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a lot. That's a lot of time.
That's a lot of time.
Yep.
You can't do it any other way, though. You have to apply your to the seat and just look at your computer screen or your pad of paper or whatever mechanism it is you use to write with. You just have to sit down and do it.
Mm-hmm.
The ideas will come if you give them time. But if you're spending all your time thinking about it, washing dishes and taking care of the household and not actually writing, you'll have fantastic ideas, but you won't have put them on paper. It's just putting them on paper figuratively or literally. That's mm-hmm. the job.
Yep, exactly. What was your hope when you wrote the book for others to find, interesting or comforting or insightful in your book?
Well, there are a lot of Alzheimer's resources out there, as you have discovered yourself, hence your Alzheimer's speaks. They're pretty hard to find. There's a ton of them, but they're not in the right locations that you might look. They're not handy at your fingertips. And many of them have to do with the how-to, like guides. I wanted to validate the experience. And funny thing that one of my readers mentioned that having read the book, she felt that her experience, her own experience, was empowered in some way. And that, I thought that was a very nice compliment, because what I was trying to aim for is for it to be seen as a way to tell your experience and to give yourself permission to tell it whatever way you feel it. And having done that, your story matters. And if you think it doesn't matter now, it's going to matter a ton more later. Mm-hmm. This is a way to bring that to fruition, a new way maybe to think about how your experience actually went down. And although, the bad and sad parts of it are still the story, and that needs to be shared. So I figured that if I could share it, then others might think that they could share it too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, which I think is really important. I think one of the biggest benefits of, writing a book is, helping people not feel so alone, in the experience. It's just, it's one of the most...
You can really feel alone, it's for sure.
Yep.
You can feel completely adrift, like, how am I going to manage this? On the other hand, all this I'm saying, it's not to say... It might not be your cup of tea. I mean, my cousin did the genealogical family research on which this is based,
mm-hmm.
and she can't even read the book. She's going through a similar situation with her parents, my uncle and my aunt-in-law, so she's not able to encounter it at the moment. And my own sister, my ally, she can't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you do have to give it time, and it might not be something that's ever going to be something you would find useful.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and did you find for yourself that it was healing to write? I hear that from so many people that... For them, they said, if no one even picks up my book, for me it was a healing process in the journey.
Well, I did have that thought. I said, my goal is to just get a publisher who wants to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the goal became an actual contract for publication. Then mm-hmm. the goal became one book appearing in print, and then a book tour of one, and then a book signing of one. The goal became very elastic. You do feel validated for sure when you see the finished product. But it was not what I envisioned when I set out. It was really the feelings that I got. Having done it, are kind of multiplying now as I think about it, not as when I set myself down to write about it. I mean, I imagined that it would be a healing thing, but I didn't imagine what actually that healing kind of meant. It feels quite a bit like healing now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It does.
Okay. Well, that's good. Are you working on anything else that you want to share with our audience?
Yes, I am. I unfortunately, you know, when one goes with a small independent publisher, you do a lot of you undertake to do a lot of the marketing your own self. They do it on their end, but they don't have one of these big budgets such as the Houghton Mifflins of the world have. So I knew that I would have to be doing it, and that takes a lot of time, and it's a huge distraction from being able to, as I was saying earlier, sit down on my chair, open my Word file, and write in it. So mm-hmm. I regret to say this thing I'm working on, which I hope to be shorter, novella kind of a length, I'm not really able to spend the time on it that I want to, but I have, what it is I have in mind a story about a group of women friends who over time, they've been friends a long time, and they got together with their husbands. All of their husbands have now passed on, and they are reflecting on their marriages with their counterparts, who all of them are immigrants to the United mm-hmm. States. So I'm kind of getting into an immigration story, a cultural story, and a long-lived marriage story. That is the point. That's where I want to get, but I'm not making very fast tracks towards it at the current moment. But I'll get mm-hmm. back to it.
It all takes time, and it unfolds when it's supposed to, too. I think sometimes when you start out with a book concept, it can change over time, too, and you know, take you in a different direction. Like, you know, you were going to write a regular memoir and then decided, nope, I needed to look at this from different angles.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Do you have any advice? Because I know a lot of our audience probably, I think everybody has a story in them, and they contemplate maybe writing every now and then. Do you have any advice for them?
Advice for writing a memoir, or advice for writing a story of any kind?
I think writing a story of any kind.
I think, it's really the discipline of sitting down and actually doing it. You can have a zillion ideas, but what you have to do is sit down and write it up. Like, it may come out as nonsense, but you can always go back to it afterwards and redraft it more towards what you thought you were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to get it down on paper. And you can choose any style. Your imagination, let it just run wild. You can don't self-edit. Just kind of put it all down there, and at a later time when you're in editorial mode, you can fix it. But the ideas have to let them bubble to the surface of your mind and then onto the paper.
Mm-hmm.
A memoir is a great genre for self-expression, but there's not only memoir. There's lots, many people choose fiction. Fiction is all made up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real freestyle, freewheeling genre. I'm trying my next piece in fiction, and it's a little scary because it's just so... anything goes. You really
mm-hmm.
have to think, what's the plot? Who are the characters? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? What are they going to say to each other? So if you sit around watching television or washing the dishes, thinking about all this stuff, that's the time when you should be sitting down actually writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're expressing yourself, and there's no you've got issues that you might not even know about. You might not even think that you have the courage or the insight to write about them. But that's you don't care about that. You mm-hmm. can fix that at a later time. Just get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. And I think it really is important to just jot things down. When you were kind of outlining your book, did you think of titles and things in terms of where you were going to put stuff in, or did you just start writing and then try to organize it after the fact?
I organized after the fact. I gave each section a kind of a subhead title, and mm-hmm. strangely enough, all of my subhead titles remained intact. With very few exceptions did I change them. They kind of they're still the structure of the book and the chronology of it, the memoir, the flashing back and the flashing forward. Those are all encapsulated by the subtitles that I gave each chapter, and they're the ones that I thought of as I was writing. What I changed was I would put them in different order mm-hmm. a lot. I changed the structure a lot.
Okay.
I played with the different points of view a lot. I would think, now who's the best person? Should I be the one saying this? But if I say it, I'm going to look like I'm a know-it-all. So this is going to be one time when I'm going to address a question to the reader, dear reader, mm-hmm. or something else. Now, this is something perfect that my mother, this is what she used to say, and I'm sure she's going to say this about this. So let's have this come out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You can be very after you've got your characters, you can be pretty analytical about what it is more likely the one is going to say and the other is going to say back. And you can mm-hmm. then you get dialogue that goes back and forth that kind of magically unfolds. I mean, in an ideal world, it's magic. It's not really magic, but I think you get the idea of what I'm trying to say.
Yep, for sure. Well, is there anything else that you want to, you know, share with our audience about your book and your journey at all?
Well, I'm very glad I did it. And I have a kind of a new understanding, if I might say, with my children, and my husband. They didn't know three quarters of all of this. Much of it they knew. They saw me going down to Newport to mm-hmm. take care of my mother. But lots of things in my past they didn't know. You know, you grow up. You don't really talk about the family story, or in my family we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So this I'm very pleased that my family has come to know how I grew up by reading mm-hmm. this, and everyone has read it. I'm pleased to say. So that's also something new, something that I've enjoyed in this whole process. So it's had a I feel very satisfied by that. If nothing else, I've got that. It's
now,
a great
did
thing
you have,
to have.
Did you have any family that pushed back on your writing about this at all? Because I know sometimes families go, you shouldn't share that stuff. You know, that's private.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had my cousin. She was, in her words, offended. She didn't like how Alzheimer's was being portrayed, you know, the mm-hmm. the parts of the disease, the parts of the interaction with yourself and the patient. She's going through it herself, so I understand. I didn't like it myself. I understand mm-hmm. her not liking it. And she she also suggested a couple of name changes, which I, seeing her point of view on it, I totally agreed with. So I did quite a lot of name changing.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the principal one, and my sister, I've been a little bit disappointed because she doesn't want to talk about it at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
yeah.
Pushback in terms of, you know, this, no one's come out and say, no, don't write that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because I know sometimes that does happen with families and you know, but yet it's your story. It might be your story and their story together, but your perception. I just find that these stories are so helpful to so many people on so many levels to, again, just not feel alone out there with, you know, on their journey. And to me, I think there's great comfort that people find in that perspective.
I feel, you know, in terms of my siblings, I do feel that I'm alone in the sense that I have my own take on this, and
mm-hmm.
you have your take, and you can write a book also. Go right
yep.
ahead. All power yep. to you. You'll feel better for it. And our points of view are not identical, and
mm-hmm.
that's okay.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And, you know, you can't please everybody, and family dynamics have their own turn. And depending on how somebody experienced the disease, if they were even part of the journey, I hear a lot of people go, well, you can't write about that. And people will say, you weren't even around. You know, you don't even know. So it is a very interesting take. Well, Kristen, I really appreciate you spending time with us today. People can go to her website, My Irish Family History and Memoir, and you can just go to www.kleyvwriter.com. She is also on LinkedIn, so you can go to Kristen Levy and look her up. She also has a Facebook page, which is klevy.writer, and she's also on Instagram, klevy_writer as well. So lots of different ways to be able to find her and find her book. I really appreciate you spending time with us today. And
well, it's my pleasure.
Time.
I love this idea of asking authors directly how they see the writing of their books. I know you're not the only one, but this is the first time anyone's asked me, so I'm very very pleased about it, and thank you very much.
Well, good. I'm like I said, I love hearing people's stories on this. And again, you can look our book up, Alzheimer's Fantasy in the Key of G. Thank you so much, everyone. We are going to hear from the Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner, and then we're all going to get on with our day. Thanks, everybody. Bye now.
I love the footbar walker, and let me tell you why. It is the option for my toolbox that I've been waiting for. Let's be honest. There are some clients who, despite our best rehab efforts, just aren't able to return to performing a sit-to-stand transfer on their own. Now I can offer my caregivers an easier, safer option that doesn't involve hoisting their loved one up from a sitting position. I don't recommend this walker for all of my clients, but I do recommend this walker for those caregivers looking for an easier, safer option with transfers. I would also encourage other therapists to add this walker to their toolbox. It's kind of like having my own mobile parallel bars for the client to pull up on. Whether it's a family caregiver at home helping a loved one with Parkinson's or dementia, CNAs in a long-term care facility assisting their patients, or therapists adapting to client and caregiver-specific needs, we now have a very safe and effective option to offer in the footbar walker. Check this product out at thefootbarwalker.com. That's it for today from Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner. Have a great day, and don't forget, if you can't do it, adapt it.
Hi, everyone. This is Meredith from the Senior Fitness with Meredith podcast, where I discuss all things for seniors, from fitness, your health and wellness journeys, how to be all over strong and beyond. I also have my mini podcast called Motivation with Meredith. It's a great, quick, motivational pick-me-up for your days. Join me, listen now, search for Senior Fitness with Meredith on your favorite podcast platform.